Living in a scientific age, we need citizens who know enough about science to make intelligent decisions about what they do. We've used science to prolong life, to increase security and happiness. But it can also be used for destruction. Are we going to use it constructively? It'll be up to you, and you too.
Hey, Todd.
Hello, Mark. Oh, hi, Mark.
Hi. How's it going?
Good.
Today's Sunday, and just a few days ago was Thanksgiving.
Thursday,
Thanksgiving. And I don't know about you, but I got addicted to Thanksgiving leftovers.
Oh, no. Yeah. Oh, no.
I had to quit cold turkey.
That one got me. In spite of myself. Have we ever had that conversation, the difference between in spite of myself or despite myself?
No.
I think I found that rabbit. I think I ended up figuring out that I think both are correct.
Both correct.
Because all of a sudden
like
it occurred
octopuses,
to me.
Octopuses and octopi.
And octopi, yeah.
And octopodes.
What's that?
That's the third option.
Why? You either have one or many. Like, what is it?
Octopuses is plural. Octopi is plural. Octopodes are also plural.
See, now I thought octopuses was incorrect. Or octopi, excuse me.
So.
Or has that just become.
There's a story.
Oh, we're in it.
So the word started to get used. And in the late 1800s, there was this big push to correct English and use the correct term. So initially it was octopuses. Mm-hmm. And they're like, well, we want to use the formal, the formal conjugation to pluralize words by bringing in the Latin equivalent. So octopus would be octopi, mm-hmm. right? Well, it turns out that octopus isn't a Latin word. It's a Greek word.
Okay.
And so after that started gaining acceptance and was written into the language, they're like, by the way.
JK lol.
There's also the correct way to pluralize Greek words, which is octopodes. So
they just added it. They didn't take away the incorrect one.
Correct. So all three are considered grammatically correct.
Interesting.
And so I only refer to them as octopodes.
That is pretty great.
Yeah.
Well, welcome to another episode of the Mark and Toddcast. I am Todd Workoven, and with me here is grammarian and, now my own linguistics are failing me. What's the study of words? I mean, yeah, I guess we're linguistics.
Linguistics? Linguarian?
A linguidopod or whatever he says.
Yeah.
Octopede.
Wordsmith.
Anyway, well, that was quite the intro. That intro got me, I played our intro theme music and it kind of jarred me again because I cut like 2 seconds out of it. And I think it was our last time. I tried to cut it down, but I just really like that. And for Fun Employment Radio listeners, that is one of Keelan King's songs, which I love and which I will not cut down anymore because I always enjoy opening the show with that. What do we have to talk about today?
We have some news items.
Okay. I asked you to start talking and then I just am going to interrupt and go. I had a couple things. You and I both watched on who? Netflix or Hulu?
The Jim Carrey Netflix.
Netflix. Okay. Sure. Yeah. There's a documentary about Jim Carrey and the making of Man on the Moon, which was the Andy Kaufman biopic.
Biopic? Yeah.
Biopods?
Biopic.
And it was really good. I mean, and he went full on like method crazy in that movie.
Yeah, like scaring people crazy.
And I think, I mean, he's a little off, I think, in a pretty intriguing way. Like, not a dangerous way, I don't think, but he's, I think, a tick off. And I don't know if that was before, after, or because of like having fame like that, or if all just piled on top of each other, but he was pretty compelling in that.
Yeah, I mean, Jim Carrey at one point was the the highest paid actor in Hollywood, about the time when the Batman that he was in, Joker.
And, Batman Forever.
Batman Forever, which terrible movie, but it had Chris O'Donnell. And
that's right, that did have Chris O'Donnell on it. Even though Batman and Robin kind of overshadows that as the most terrible Batman movie, I don't think Batman Forever is any better.
Right.
With Tommy Lee Jones' Two-Face. Anyway, we won't get distracted by that.
and he just dove into this Andy Kaufman character and the derivatives of the Andy Kaufman character, because Andy Kaufman had multiple characters that he would be in.
I remember watching, even watching this, like I am, every once in a while it happens on Curb Your Enthusiasm, but because I know that it's, that awkwardness is fake, it's not as bad. But I always had trouble with Andy Kaufman, like as a performer. And like, I know that's what his point was, but that's why it bothers me, because that was his only point.
Right.
And like, it was just that. It's like how Nick, when Nick makes jokes, it's just standing, it's just giving each other unease for us to hold. It's
He's our own Andy Kaufman.
He really is. But yeah, it's really worth checking out. I really enjoyed it. And I forget what it's called now, but it's right on the top of all the search lists, because I think it's
Jim
fairly
and Andy.
New. Jim and Andy. Yeah,
Jim
that's
and
right.
And the beard.
And he does have a crazy man beard in that, like the long stringy, uncombed, frazzled beard.
Yeah. One that makes him unrecognizable.
It really does. Yeah. So that was good. And I also watched one, and I can't remember what this one's called either, but it's a documentary about the creators of Curious George. And how they began in France, and they were in marketing and advertising, and the husband was an illustrator, and the woman was a photographer and kind of designer and stuff like that. And they were asked to write a couple of children's books in France, and they did. And George was one of the monkeys in this like big monkey. So he wasn't featured or anything. And they're like, well, why don't you know, make one about this monkey? And so they write the first draft of Curious George right as the war is breaking out, and everybody has to flee France. They're both Jewish. And so like literally on bikes, because that was the only way to get out, they had like whatever fit on their bike, and that was the manuscript of Curious George and like whatever, and they made it through France and to Spain and then down to Brazil for a couple years and then up to America. And it was really quite fascinating little story. Especially my favorite point is that the wife who wrote the story hated children, and like openly, and she was like a very, like everyone was kind of afraid of her. She was one of those, like, I'll just say anything that I'm feeling and say it loudly and crazily. And like, what it shows, she was that type of person. And she's like, we ain't got nothing to learn from children, which is pretty great. And he was just like a Mr. Rogers type, you know, kids loved him and he loved spending time with them and all that. And
there's a lot of children phobic famous authors.
Yeah.
Dr. Seuss was famously like, he didn't hang out with children. There was no children in his life. He was pretty detached from children.
Oh, interesting.
As well,
I didn't know
as
that.
Where the Wild Things Are.
Oh, Maurice Sendak.
Maurice Sendak. Yeah.
Yeah. I did know about that. Yeah, that's so funny.
Yeah.
But I think there's something about those curmudgeonly people that connect with how things don't make sense, just like, because the process of growing up is just accepting things that don't make sense and like how you cope with that.
Right. Like I've got the children's book, We Can't Afford That, which is awesome. It's straight out of like 1979. And the little girl wants a trike. You know, it's the new trike that they saw in the window. And dad's like, we can't afford that.
Yeah.
And so they spruce up the old trike that she had, and it's just as good.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's
that's
awesome.
So funny. The other thing I had, we don't really do a lot of picks, as they say, but there's this thing called, have you heard of ResistBot?
No, I have not.
ResistBot is an app where you can directly message your congressman.
It goes
to their fax machine, so that which sounds outdated, but I would guess that of all the ways to get a hold of someone, that is a provable way that people are using and communicating, and it's harder to ignore a bunch of pieces of paper coming out of a machine like emails or like whatever. But if you go to resistbot.io, actually, I'm looking at the computer, so that's clearly if you just go to the app store. But you just type in your zip code, and it will and you text resist to it, and then whatever you text to that number will go to your congressman. So, and if, I mean, I would recommend anyone using this. I haven't used it yet, but if you do, I would say the most effective way to do it is just keep it short and clear and not not troll and stuff like that. But it's a great way to get a hold of your congressperson. So that's called ResistBot. So I thought that was a neat little app. Anyway, and then one other thing is, and I think about this, it's one of the shower thoughts or whatever, and then you don't have any place to write it down or whatever, so you always forget. But I had a question about suction.
Yes.
And I always think about it in the shower.
First,
because
it doesn't exist.
Suction doesn't exist?
Correct.
Okay, so you're excited to talk?
I'm always excited to
okay.
talk about suction.
So I always think about it because I usually shave in the shower, and I have one of the little suction cup mirrors
yep.
that you put up. And I keep trying to figure out what forces are at play. Is it just atmospheric pressure?
Solamente. Yeah, exactly. It is.
So when you push the suction cup on there, you're obviously getting rid of that cushion of air.
So there's two things going on there. So you have the suction cup that has tension to it, and but more importantly, it creates a seal, and that tension is pulling from the vacuum that's being created, and the pressure of air on the outside is pushing on the other side of it. So you've got, if you think of the suction cup as a spring, basically, mm-hmm. it's being pushed more by the pressure of the air on the outside than the vacuum area on the inside. And because it's got a airtight seal, that
there's nothing to equalize that pressure.
So
do all suction devices or whatever have, are they all the same amount of strength? I don't know how to ask that in a way that makes sense, but you know what I mean?
Not exactly.
I mean, I guess you can make right. bigger ones, but it seems like atmospheric pressure is atmospheric pressure. So they all sort of work.
Well, that spring tension that rubber has. And so you can have a suction cup that has a sharper angle, if you will.
Okay.
And it will take more force to push out the air from that pocket, which now it's resisting and pushing back against it.
Okay.
Which the air pressure from the outside is pushing against.
Okay.
And so, yeah, you can have different strength suction cups.
Okay.
With the same size.
Huh. Yeah, I think about that every time. It's like, is it just air pressure that's making this so hard to like unstick from my wall and move it 4 inches to the left so I can see myself?
Totally.
Huh.
Yeah. Yeah. And vacuum cleaners are the same situation. Is that vacuum cleaners,
it's not
aren't
just a reverse fan.
They're not exerting a force. They are creating
right.
an empty space for the high pressure air on the outside to push
right.
stuff into.
Well, it's like being on the backside of a fan.
Correct.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, because it's pulling the air through to push out the
kind
other side.
Kind of being on the front side of a fan.
Well, no, because you have
the
air
blown
at you.
Oh, yeah,
the
backside, yeah. I was thinking of an evacuation fan.
What's an evacuation fan?
You use it to evacuate a space by sucking air out of it, but there's no such thing as suction.
Like, it doesn't exist. This thing doesn't. Okay.
I was thinking
like
the front
exhaust
side.
Fan.
Right, exhaust fan.
There, oh, okay. I'm trying to think of like if we're evacuating this house, somehow you're like, there's a fan that will get you and me and Nick and the dog safely out of the
we're
house.
Evacuating the toxic chemicals
right,
that are
okay,
in the air
okay.
or whatever.
All right. Anyway, that's all I... I did have a... We could talk about it later, but I did wonder, because last winter I discovered that when I put those neodymium magnets or whatever yep. those are called on my cast iron fireplace, when the fireplace got too hot, it would lose its magnetism. We talked about last year.
Huh.
So there's a certain temperature, and I looked it up. I forget what it is. But that made me think that if heat affects magnetism, how does like something like Earth or the sun...
Well, heat would affect the material that has...
the magnetic properties.
Right. That has ferrous properties where all of the domains are aligned. And so if you scramble up those domains with heat, then you no longer have them all aligned and you no longer have a magnetic material.
Interesting.
Whereas the Earth, part of the you've got this nickel core that has magnetic properties to it. It's spinning on the inside and doing all the magic.
That's
stuff.
What they want you to think. We'll hear more about that later in our news. So
yes.
Should we keep playing our ticker tape underneath news? Do we want music? I don't know what we want.
No, we don't need to.
What do we want? All right. Well, then why don't you take us into the news?
Cool. So there's a series of researchers in the University of Trento in Italy who have given a spider some graphene to drink. And its spider web is 5 times stronger than normally.
Wow.
So it's taken carbon nanotubes basically and infused them into the web, and so now it's on par with Kevlar for bullet resistance. And
I wonder
if
they could do the same thing with silkworms. I imagine
I'm sure
bullet resistant silk.
Exactly.
Wow.
And so they're taking super nanotechnology science and combining it with nature very naturally by literally feeding a spider carbon nanotubes.
Wow.
And coming out
that's
with
crazy materials. Doesn't like wreck their system.
Yeah, wrecked her.
I don't know why that one especially was so funny.
I barely knew her.
So that's puts it on par with pure carbon fiber in strength as well as Kevlar, the material bulletproof Vesser made. Yeah.
Wow. That's crazy.
So the same time that the Tesla Semi was announced, Elon also announced the Roadster refresh, and we didn't talk about that at all. So the Roadster was the original Tesla car, and sport car, kind of modeled after the Lotus, two-seater, everything. So the new Roadster, it's roomier at 4 seats, comes with a removable top, and is faster. The car will travel a whopping 0 to 60 in less than 2 seconds.
Jeez.
1.9 seconds at a top speed of 250 miles an hour or more is what Elon Musk says. The Roadster, which won't be available until 2020, will have 3 motors and be able to drive 620 miles on a single charge.
Wow.
So you can go to Los Angeles, to San Francisco, and back on a single charge. Base price of $200,000. There's already a reservations page. You just need to supply $50,000 towards your reservation.
Wow. Have you heard it all on yours, the one that you'd put a deposit on? When was that, like 2 years ago?
It got delayed, and I have retracted my deposit. Just looking at my finances and the consistent delays and everything, I better use of that $1,000 deposit.
Oh, totally.
So I'm going to wait until the second round comes out and has a better... work out the bugs.
Yeah, totally.
And then Tesla also says that they are planning a founders series of the Tesla Roadster. So that'll be a $250,000 car, and you can put a reservation on that one for $250,000.
Wow. and that's not supposed to be until 2020, at least.
2020
is the announce. So 2025.
Right. But there's already a couple companies that have stepped up to try out the Tesla Semi. And so that'll be coming out in the next
year. I think Walmart is one of them.
Walmart is one of them. Yeah, they put an order in for 18 vehicles.
Wow.
And
it's coming. The future is driving our way.
Hey, it is.
All right, speaking of the future, Germany banned sales of children's smartwatches due to eavesdropping fears and advised parents to destroy any devices or devices they may currently have. Wow, destroy them, not just take them back. It's like in airplanes, how they always say, not just like, please don't tamper with or destroy the smoke detector. Right. Just like, easy, calm down. They said the devices could be used by parents to listen to their children without their knowledge. I don't know why. That's kind of an odd way to state that. The Norwegian Consumer Council warned parents that these devices may have vulnerabilities that could make stealing data or hacking the device relatively easy. The organization even found one of the smartwatches providing unencrypted location information to servers in China. Although Germany's authorities banned children's smartwatches, the U.S. is being a little less active, issuing a public service announcement earlier this year. The announcement, issued by the FBI, warned that children's smart devices can, quote, record and collect conversations within earshot of the device. Information such as the children's name, schools, likes and dislikes, and activities may be disclosed through normal conversation. So Germany is not standing for any of that. Probably for good reason, because Uber paid hackers to delete stolen data on 57 million people, a massive breach that the company concealed for more than a year, including a $100,000 payment to the attackers. The compromised data include names, email addresses, and phone numbers of riders around the world. The personal information about 7 million drivers was accessed as well, including some 600,000 drivers' license numbers. Thankfully, no security numbers or credit card information or locations were found, Uber said.
Uber sucks. Like, in so many ways, they do things very aggressively and without, like, when they come into Portland and there's a block put on their business, they just nefariously skipped all of that and put in the gray bar. They had that program.
I've never used Uber.
They're a terrible company. Lyft is infinitely
Thank you to
bad.
All the Uber drivers who are listening to us as they drive around.
Transfer to Lyft. Because Uber wants your job anyway. Their drivers they've told them very specifically, you are temporary. You will be phased out as soon as we can with automated vehicles. And
And didn't they do something like last year that was controversial or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, so they took some stance against, I don't know, kittens or something that everyone was ticked off about.
I don't know about the kitten one, but they did. What they would do is they had an app that the Uber drivers would avoid regulators. So when they moved into Portland, there's people out in the world that are authorities and look for Uber breaking the rules. And so Uber put a program in place that avoided those people. And so if they asked for an Uber car, Uber would basically send them through a spiral of your car is just about to come here, and it'll be here soon, and you just wait here, and we're transferring. Oh, that one was blocked, and we're good. And until they got frustrated and wouldn't participate, and so programs like that.
Interesting.
They're a terrible company.
Okay, they're also just sending out everyone's data. So, Facebook is going to show users which Russia propaganda they followed, responding to a request from Congress to address manipulation and meddling during the 2016 presidential election. The tool will appear by the end of the year in the support center. It will answer the question, how can I see if I've liked or followed a Facebook page or Instagram account? Created by the Internet Research Agency, and that is the Russian firm that created thousands of incendiary posts from fake accounts posing as U.S. citizens. So if you followed anything from January 2015 to August 2017, you will be able to see if any of the things that you followed or liked was from this Russian firm. So that's an interesting.
I wonder how that'll pan out, actually. Like, because when we are shown our own faults, we tend to discard double down that on them.
Yeah.
And go deeper.
Oh, really? Oh, really?
And I feel like this won't be validation, or like this won't change anybody's mind or anything. It'll just cause further. They're lying to me about who I liked.
Yeah. Oh, totally. That fake news narrative is
powerful.
Amazingly powerful.
Incredible.
Amazingly powerful.
Disarming in every way.
Yes. And speaking as a person whose best friend used to be denial, it is that is not easy for me to say that. Yep. Anyway, finally, I guess that's all the news I had. I thought I had more than that. Anyway,
finally,
this is a longer one. A man was going to launch himself in his homemade rocket to prove that the earth is flat. I didn't even know the second half of that when I flagged this story. I was like, oh, guy going to, and then I started reading.
He's amazing.
Assuming the 500 mile, oh wait. Mark.
Oh, sorry.
That's a guarantee.
Keep going.
Assuming that the 500 mile per hour, mile long flight through the Mojave Desert did not kill him, Mike Hughes told the Associated Press his journey to the atmosphere, would mark the first phase of his ambitious flat Earth space program. Quote, it'll shut the door on this ball Earth, Hughes said in a fundraising interview. Hughes promised he promised the Flat Earth Society to expose the conspiracy with his steam-powered rocket, which will launch from a heavily modified mobile home, though he acknowledged he has much to learn about rocket science. The whole tech thing, he said in a June interview, I'm really behind the eight ball. So he compared himself to Evel Knievel. He's got some YouTube videos, and he promised to launch himself from a California racetrack. But the Kickstarter he tried raised $310 of its $150,000 goal until he called in the Flat Earth community as a recent convert. So as soon as he attached the Flat Earth stuff like that, he was able to raise the money. So just in case you're keeping track, John Glenn and Neil Armstrong are Freemasons, Hughes said. Once you understand that, you understand the roots of the deception, Mark.
Oh.
You see how deep that goes. And quote Elon Musk's fake reality and the Antichrist Illuminati, Hughes said.
My great-grandfather was a Freemason. maybe I'm part of the conspiracy.
You're part of the conspiracy. It goes deep. It goes. That's what I love about those, is how deep all those things have to go in order to work. So anyway, so he was going to send himself up yesterday. So this just in, the man who believes the earth is flat and was ready to launch himself from the rocket has canceled his plans, at least for now, because he does not have the required federal permits. And then it says, plus mechanical problems with his, quote, motorhome / rocket launcher.
Steam-powered rocket launcher.
Forced the self-taught rocket scientist, Mad Mike Hughes, to put his experiment on hold. So the BLM, which is not, every time I hear that news, I always say, okay, Black Lives Matter or Bureau of Land Management. So the Bureau of Land Management, quote, told me they would not allow me to do the event, at least not at this location. So it's been very disappointed, said the 61-year-old crazy man.
Wow.
So
that's a bummer.
More news to come, I'm sure, from Mad Mike Hughes. So,
so on Thanksgiving, we had a big group of people over here, and I set up a microscope station with the computer and the microscope that you gave me for Christmas a couple of years ago. I don't know what. And, one of the kids took a picture and challenged me to locate the source of it.
Ooh, okay.
And this is that photo.
Oh, wow. It looks like little like cellular strands of some sort. Did you guess correctly?
No.
Should you say your guess before mine? I'm going to go with the... Can I ask if it's something in this room? Or
it is something in this room.
Okay, because I was going to guess the loofah sponge because it looks like little cellular structures. So, oh boy. There's nothing like that in here. I don't know. What is that?
You are speaking into it right now.
Oh, it is. There's little flecks of blue in there. There's not near as much blue. This is the fuzzy microphone covers that we use that
Isn't
look like
that
Beaker's head. Oh, wow. That's really neat. Ooh, send that image to me. I'll
send that picture
use that
to you.
As the image. That's really cool.
Yeah.
Good for them.
Yeah, they're great kids.
Children are the future.
Teach them well.
Teach them well.
So
let's go to
let's go to the
Uno Piper, and we'll talk to him about something.
O'Brien. Hello, is this the Uno Piper?
You got me, Todd. Mark,
how's it going?
Good. I can't keep you guys straight.
He's the straight one.
Zing.
I need a joke to start that episode.
How are you doing?
Doing a lot better now that I'm at home. I just spent like the last 4.5 hours in traffic on I-5. Miserable. But if there was any saving grace of that whole experience, it was that Sarah and I stopped in Coburg, Oregon, which is just north of Eugene. And it's one of those towns along the interstate that you always see signs for. Nobody ever goes there, but it's like Coburg Historic Antique District. So that's where we decided to have lunch today. And we stopped into the most amazing antique store. It actually was a really cool store there.
Oh, wow.
I highly recommend if you're passing and you've got the time, check out the Antique District of Coburg. There's like two stores there and they're both worth stopping in.
Oh, nice. Did they have VHS tapes?
I didn't see a single VHS tape. To put it in perspective, Todd, the conversation that I had with the lady at the counter, I found in the store a pile of vinyl records, and they were unbelievable selection at unbelievable prices.
Oh, wow.
Like, I would have bought some of the albums that I did end up buying at triple the price, and that would have still been a good deal in Portland.
Wow, that's cool.
And so I did get some actual legit good stuff. But in addition, not to say that this is not good, because it is definitely good, but I'm so happy that I have a copy of Your Spirit Lives On, the musical legend of Harry Truman. This is,
as we know, our most musical president. Or well, is this the Harry Truman that lived on Mount St. Helens and refused to leave?
Yes.
It is?
This is an entire album of songs that's 12 tracks. Done by various artists, and they are all written about that Harry Truman.
Oh my gosh, Mark just pulled up a picture of the record cover. That is unbelievable.
The musical legend of.
It gets better because mine is a signed copy.
What?
By Harry Truman?
Yes.
No way. Okay, you have to send a picture. Send me a picture of it so I can use it for the image of this week's episode.
I will. I literally flipped out when I saw this because it is signed on the cover by Harry Truman. And then I thought about it and I'm like, how is that even possible? Because like, So I'll read it to you and then maybe you can figure out what's going on. I think I know what's going on. It says, Randall, happy birthday. I just wanted to say, boy, it's getting warm here. And I hope, what's that red molten stuff? Yikes.
Oh, brother.
So I think somebody bought this and gave it to somebody else as a gag gift back in 1980.
Oh, my God. That is pretty amazing, though, that you found
that. That's incredible.
Yeah. And it's in, like, mint condition. So.
Wow. Yeah. That's
Can't
great.
Can't wait to listen to some of the tracks. The Ode to Harry Truman, My Woman, My Mountain, Spirit of the Mountain, Mountain Man, We Want Lava. Yeah.
We Want Lava. Well, that took a dark turn all of a sudden.
Tell Harry, track
oh,
number two.
Oh, my God.
That is fantastic.
Yes, it was well worth 5 hours in traffic.
So what else is going on?
I did something really cool last week. I went out to Beaverton to be 3D scanned as the Unipiper.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, you were talking about that.
Yeah, it's pretty neat given my day job in the LiDAR industry. So, you know, I was very interested when I got the opportunity to somebody wanted to do a 3D scan and make a complete 3D model of the Unipiper. So I was really curious to see what kind of technology it was and how it worked and how it compared to LiDAR, which we, of course, have talked about on the show before. So turns out it uses a technology called structured light scanning, which is different from LiDAR in that it is a handheld scanner, and it's got two cameras like you would see on like a 3D camera, so like two lenses. And then it has around those two cameras a ring of very bright LEDs, and it flashes those LEDs very fast. And while it does that, it projects a grid onto the object that it's scanning. And then based on the position of those two eyes, it looks at the distortion of that grid projected onto the object, and using triangulation can interpret and figure out the distance between
the grid.
And as you scan, it shows up. It does create a point cloud, but in real time, it smooths out the points and adds polygons, and you can see the object you're scanning in real time. And it was really neat. And
so, is that for a project that we can't talk about, or is that for something that was just for fun, or what did you do that for?
A little bit of both.
Okay.
This company was interested in just doing a collaboration and doing something fun and different. And the potential for having a 3D Unipiper model, I think, is gonna come in real handy. There will be some neat projects.
It'd be amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah. So can't wait to see how that turns out.
Nice.
It's gonna be a very busy week for the Unipiper. So I thought I might just talk about what a few of the things I have coming up this week, and where folks what they have to look forward to and where they can find me. I am never around on Thanksgiving. We end up going out of town visiting usually Sarah's parents, or travel back to Virginia or something. So I've never been there, but the big tree in Pioneer Square is up now. I don't know if you guys have seen it yourself.
Not this year. I know that they light it the day after Thanksgiving, and so it's a big thing down there at Pioneer Cora Square. But I didn't go this year.
One thing I just learned about the tree is that when they put it up, they use a Doug fir for the main body of the tree, but Doug firs are never that full. So they actually drill holes into the tree all the way up and then fill it with branches from other types of firs and evergreens.
Why don't they just use a Douglas or what's the other kind? Because there's the two kind. You're the one that is very sparse like that, and there's the other full kind. Am I thinking of the Douglas fir? Or is that the kind?
My only guess is that none of the trees are that full for
that big.
For that tall.
Makes sense, I guess. That's funny.
So anyways, that is up. And on Tuesday, if you want to come out, I'm going to be doing a promotion with the city of Portland. I'm going to be dressed up like the Grinch and unipiping around downtown midday Tuesday.
Oh, fun.
In and around the tree area at Pioneer Square.
Nice.
But you guys should definitely tomorrow and Monday tune in to Firefox, be looking at their website. I'm sure they will be promoting this. They're going to have a live telethon counting the number of downloads of their brand new Firefox Quantum web browser. I know you're already using it, Todd. We've talked about that.
Yes. accidentally, even. It just happened to do. When I quit out of it and started up again, there it was.
You have no choice.
I have no choice.
They're doing this weird telethon thing, and the Unipiper is going to be part of the celebration sometime around 2 o'clock tomorrow.
Oh, wow.
So tune in your browsers.
2 o'clock Firefox. Okay.
Yep.
I won't ask any more questions. It's just I was very excited there for a second.
I don't have any more information.
Okay, okay.
I could get an answer. Wednesday, if folks are headed out to the Oregon Zoo, they do their Zoo Lights Festival every year. But on Wednesday this year, they're doing a special adults-only version called the Brew Lights.
Brew Lights.
And the Unipiper will be there spinning the holiday tunes.
Well, that sounds like fun.
That's pretty awesome.
What time does that start?
I don't know. I have to check my paperwork, but I would assume dark time
in the evening
yeah
when the adults come out.
Thursday, you guys got your calendars marked?
I do. I was telling Mark beforehand, I don't care what happens, somebody say something Thursday so that I do not forget to come to another thing like I did on poor Sarah's birthday party.
That's right. What are we doing on Thursday, Todd?
We are going to Cinema 21 to see The Disaster Artist.
Yes.
Which I'm very excited about. And I was telling Mark beforehand, the How Did This Get Made podcast that I love, the three hosts of that are, have pretty, big roles in it. So I'm excited to see them too.
Wait, they have a role in the movie?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because they're all actors too. It's Paul Scheer, June Diane Raphael, her name, and Jason Mantzoukas. So they'll show up on like Brooklyn.
Do they play themselves?
I don't think they play themselves. I think Paul Scheer plays like the production designer. So I've seen him. You can see him in the back of the trailers. He's like always standing in the back with the baseball cap. But I do know the other two are in it at some capacity, but I don't know what. Okay. So
I don't know how, you know, far this movie goes into
how,
you know,
deep, like, it goes
aftermath of the movie coming out. That would be interesting if they were, you know, talking about The Room as themselves on the podcast.
Totally. Yeah. Cause they've done, that's the, actually how I found them. They did an episode about The Room, and that was the first one I listened to, and I liked it. And I've been a fan ever since.
The Room, bringing people together.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's Thursday.
And, I've heard, hold on. Before we skip by the Room and The Disaster Artist, I read an article that there's like 90 minutes of additional footage that just couldn't fit into the movie of the scene by scene making of The Room. There's tons and tons and tons of footage.
Yeah. Cause they took backstage footage of that.
Yeah. And so, he's looking to basically make a second direct to DVD movie that is just all of the extra.
Oh, interesting. Footage like their version of the movie
of The Room. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's going to be neat. That reminds me of some other movies have done that before, where they have so much extra footage that they release it as like a DVD bonus, where it's almost like a separate movie.
Yeah, exactly.
Anchorman DVD did that.
Yeah.
Cool. It's been getting really good reviews from the...
This just in, Brian.
Brewlights is sold out.
Oh, damn.
It's so popular. If you don't have a ticket already, look online and see if you can scalp one.
But if you're anywhere near the zoo, you will be able to still hear the bagpipes. So if you're any on the west side of the river, you will be able to hear Brian at the zoo lights. That's funny. Well, good for them.
Yeah. And then on Friday this week, tune in your radio to AM on KPAM.
850, I believe, or 860.
860.
860. 860. KPAM from 6 to 10 in the morning. The Unipiper is going to be a guest host on their morning show.
Oh, wow.
With Tim and Terry. And it's part of a fundraiser that they're doing. We're going to be raising money for veterans family assistance over the holidays.
Oh, wow. That's great. You're there the whole 4 hours?
I'm going to be there for the whole 4 hours.
That is awesome.
Yeah, and I think folks are going to call in and you know, be able to talk to the Unipiper and ask their Unipiper questions.
Oh, that's fantastic. Do they do podcasts too? Like, do they put their episodes online for all those KPAM listeners that are heavy into podcasts?
Yes, I believe they do, Todd.
Oh, nice.
You can load it up onto your iPod Shuffle. I don't know how big the file size is. Maybe too big for Shuffle.
I have to get my vacuum tubes ready. Well, that's pretty great.
It is. So please call in and ask me a question. Try and stump the Unipiper.
And that was from when to when?
6 to 10 on Friday.
6 to 10 on Friday. All right.
That'll be a lot of fun.
And what are we doing on Saturday, Todd?
We are going to be at the first annual Portland Podcast Festival with Portland at the Movies.
Ooh.
Very
on the main stage.
On the main stage. So that'll be, we've already talked about it, but I don't know if it's on the episode yet, but we're very excited and nervous about that. And I couldn't keep it all secret. I did not give away the name of the movie, but I did say the hallowed words, Chuck Norris.
Did you go one step further and say Chuck Norris transforming into a bear?
I have said nothing more than Chuck Norris, but it is.
I think the term is shapeshifts.
Shapeshifts. Yeah, Mark watched it this morning twice, he said. Have you watched it yet, Brian?
I did. I watched it over the Thanksgiving break.
It is amazing. Quite something. So yes, that's where we will be on Saturday. So if you go to Portland, do you remember the URL for the tickets? I think it's PDX.
PDX Podfest?
Podfest.
Festival?
Clownpenis.fart.
Yeah, that was right. PDXpodfestival.com.
Okay. Yeah, and get tickets for that. It's going to be fun. I know a bunch of people that will be there, a bunch of podcasts, and of course, Brian will be. And I think you'll have some of your merch there too. I'm not quite sure how much, but I'm pretty sure we'll be able to get some of that in. So,
for sure. And then lastly, folks should also put on their calendar to come visit you and me, Todd, as we'll be in Pioneer Square Mall on the 9th and 10th of December, as part of downtown Portland's pop-up shops over the holidays. We'll be inside the mall with a table with Unipiper merchandise and VHS and record notebooks.
Yes, that'll also be. I didn't know if that was a secret thing or not, but I'm looking forward to that. That'll be really neat.
Yeah.
Awesome.
So wow, busy December. I've got to get all of this in before I have a baby.
Yes. It is going to be a crazy month for you, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a Christmas miracle.
Wouldn't have it any other way.
Wouldn't have it any way. Well, all right. Well, thanks for taking a little bit of time. People want to find out more about you. What can they do?
Stay up to date with me. Probably your best bet with all of the goings on is to follow me on Facebook at The Unipiper.
Fantastic. All right. Have a good rest of the day. We're glad you're back in town safe, and we will talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, guys. See ya.
Bye.
See ya.
Bye.
And we're back.
That was fun.
That was fun. Good talk.
I can't believe what he just said.
It was outrageous. You'll just have to listen.
Okay. So they just did.
Okay, that's right.
We're the only ones that don't know what he just said.
The only ones in the dark.
Okay. So today I thought we'd talk about quantum computing because I don't know anything about it. And it is an incredibly abstract concept. And so I will probably not do a good job of conveying the depth of the possibilities of quantum computing. But I thought
that
we'd
is
have
literally our slogan. We are incapable of communicating the depth of these subjects that we are speaking about.
So just over a year ago, Justin Trudeau, the Prime Minister of Canada, was speaking at a science symposium, and one of the reporters said, "Hey, tell us about quantum computing." And everybody laughed and everything. And he had a pretty well scripted, or, you know, there's conspiracy theories about exactly how, you know, he just came out of a conference talking about this thing. So it's not like he is a theoretical physicist, right, but he was able to summarize quantum computing in a little nutshell. So could we play that little clip?
Yeah.
Very simply, normal computers work by...
Oh, he's flashing his little grin.
Don't interrupt me.
Oh, Justin.
You will know more. No, some of you will know
so
far
charming.
Less.
You're such a tease, Justin.
Most of you, normal computers work either there's power going through a wire or not. It's one or a zero. They're binary systems. What quantum states allow for is much more complex information to be encoded into a single bit. Regular computer bit is either a one or a zero, on or off. A quantum state can be much more complex than that because, as we know, things can be both particle and wave at the same times, and the uncertainty around quantum states allows us to encode more information into a much smaller computer. So that's what's exciting about quantum computing, and that's what we're doing.
So quantum computing essentially is using quantum mechanics instead of traditional logic gates. So let's first talk about how current computers work, mm-hmm, or traditional or classic computing. So classic computing is based on binary as ones and zeros, and the ability for, you've got a CPU, the central processing unit for a computer, is ultimately billions and billions of transistors. And those transistors are able to express one or a zero based on the input that it's given. And by making huge collections of those, you can do really, you start with a simple thing. This is a one or a zero. By coupling a bunch of those transistors together, you can go, if I give you one and add another one to it, then I can output two. And so once you can do math of simple addition, then you can do multiplication. Because if I can do addition, I just add the same thing multiple times to the list. Now I can do multiplication. Once I can do multiplication, I can create a video game, basically. Mm-hmm.
I think we need to start our own Facebook web stream of just your hand gestures when you talk, because it really does help. And I don't know, you're like, you're not really doing anything discernible. You're just sort of like, one, your fingers are together, and sometimes they're up and down. And
it was my training in Italian that made that happen. And so classic computers is all based on ones and zeros and using transistors to do that. The Moore's law is that scientific theorem that says as time progresses and the evolution and technology progresses, the speed of things will increase and the size of them will decrease. And so we've seen that like every 18 months to 2 years, we've seen a doubling in speed and a halving of the physical size of things. Well, we're running into problems with that because the size of transistors are getting down to the molecular level, where you can't.
What kind of machine makes that? Like, that doesn't even make sense.
Just very.
It's like whenever you see those pictures of like the needle that's like pressing into the single cell. It's like, what is this needle? Who even make that or operate it? Yeah,
I mean,
get the right cell. I mean, come on.
Conspiracy. I mean, yeah, it is. It's ultimately a measure of photolithography, and they're using chemicals on the surface of silicon to infuse one or two little tiny molecules of borium or boron or another doping material to transform silicon to make it into a transistor. So you're just taking chemicals, using photolithography and other techniques to print the transistor makeup on the surfaces, on the surface and layers of the processor.
Okay.
Right? So we're getting down to this physical constraint of molecular of atoms, basically, is you can't get smaller than an atom if atoms are the building blocks of the things, right? Well, this becomes very problematic in solving very large data calculations. Like if you want to crack somebody's secure certificate, currently, it would take several trillion years for the fastest computer in classic computers to be able to do all of the processing and the encrypting and decrypting techniques that are required to do that. Because each piece of data is just a linear piece of data. It's either a one or a zero. And so you have to work through all of those individual possibilities of ones and zeros. So classic computing works in binary digits of ones and zeros. So a bit stands for binary digit bit, right? Quantum computing uses qubits, which are quantum bits, which is another portmanteau for binary digit. So it's a quantum binary digit or a quantum bit. A classic computing bit is either a one or a zero. A qubit is a one or a zero or a superposition that is both 1 and 0 at the same time and has a probability of being something else.
Or Batman.
Or Batman. It's, and this is clearly the moment of divergence from I can understand this very simply to something that is more theoretical.
It's like Schrodinger's bit. Schrodinger's both on and off.
It is totally on and off. So basically, instead of using transistors, they use atoms that have quantum mechanic properties to them. And so instead of using a transistor, they'll use the spinning of an electron, and that spinning of electron can either be spinning up as a one, spinning down as a zero, or it could be spinning both up and down. And statistically, until you look at it, it is both. But once you look at it, then it snaps into place and says, I'm a one or I'm a zero.
Look at it and how?
Once we measure it.
Okay.
Once we observe it. Then it, so it takes really on the role. It is absolutely that.
Huh.
So it has this statistical propensity to be the result.
So
of
it's
one
like
of those
if
zeros.
We if I went out, if we went outside right now and I flipped a coin and it went under the car.
Right.
It could be both. We don't know until we check it.
Right. Except
also our car is a black hole and
right. Except you know
physics don't make sense.
That breaks down. Soon, because that analogy breaks down because
it's still
it
not
truly
both.
Is one or the other. We just haven't looked at it yet. In the case of an electron spinning, it technically is both. And I know that that doesn't make any sense. And that is the deal with quantum mechanics.
Okay. So I just have to accept that and move
yeah.
on. Okay.
Yeah. It really, it doesn't make sense to, okay. to us.
How do we
physical,
know that?
Tangible. Well,
or is that still theoretical?
It, we are
like if
able
we...
to like the dual split, the dual slit tests, where things have properties of both particles and waves, it is both a particle and a wave, and it depends on when you look at it that determines what it chooses to become, right? And that's just,
crazy how nature do that.
It is. So quantum mechanics deals with,
I mean, this is statistics. It's really terrifying.
It is absolutely terrifying. So a quantum computer employs spinning electrons. There's actually like 17 different techniques being tested right now in different science natures of how can we employ quantum devices at the molecular level and create a quantum computer. So IBM is currently the one of the foremost leaders in quantum computing. And they have put together a quantum computer and made it available to the public. You can go online and
can do
and go to the Q project or let's see, IBM Q quantum Q experience. That's what it's called.
That's as always, IBM could use some help in dressing up some of their IBM quantum experience.
And
quantum what? Quantum experience.
Quantum experience.
Ng.
Bluemix.net / QX / editor.
Can I just go to just.com?
I just go to Google and type in
seriously.
IBM.
Oh, IBM. IBM.
Jesus. What's going on over there?
Okay. Boy, that really is there. Why? Okay. Is this not like a hugely public site yet? I mean, ng.bluenet.net, bluemix.net. That's like
you
when you're
find
offered,
it with
like, that's when, whenever you want the
cloudpita.fart.
You want that specific one. It's like, oh, you can still have the .net. And you're like,
oh,
no.
Right.
Not me.
We should probably close with the clown penis dot fart.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That's a good one. So
so at least there's context for people who don't know what that is.
I I show that to all junior developers. Nobody's ever seen that, and because I always use it in reference of like, well, then go to the website, you know, clownpenis.fart, and they think I'm like sexually assaulting them.
You said which penis, you are until they figure out.
And then yes. Too soon.
And then I'm fired. Too soon.
Sorry. And the SNL skit. Okay. So they actually have three quantum computers going. They have two that have 5 qubits and one that's experimental in beta that has 16 qubits. So a qubit is the measuring element in a quantum computer, like a bit, but it's a qubit. And so a bit can be either one or a zero. Mm-hmm. A qubit can be a one, a zero, or in the superposition, which the superposition is one and zero, which means that it's in both states all the time. So if I have a 4-bit classic computer that's got 16 different options that the computer can be in at any time, a 4-bit quantum computer can be in all of those at the same time. And that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, good. I'm glad you said it.
But it's really good for computing things that deal with statistics. An example would be proteins and doing the molecular modeling of protein generation. In traditional computing, it takes every electron interacts with every other electron in a molecular model. And when they try to model that, the number of computations that are necessary are just staggering in the hundreds of billions of computations that are necessary. How a quantum computer approaches that problem is very different, and it takes seconds instead of hundreds of millions of years. And because it's measuring and doing quantum math using quantum devices is the easiest way to it is doing
magic.
It is
using
really
magic. It does magic things.
Right. And so instead of trying to do quantum modeling using linear math, they're taking quantum modeling using quantum math, if you will, and quantum devices to do that. So I've literally watched maybe 12 different explanation videos up, each one, 10 minutes to 30 minutes long. I've spent most of today trying to learn about quantum mechanics, and everybody has kind of the same.
It can be on, it could be off, it could be both.
What
can you do?
Right. And they all like, and that kind of blows your mind, doesn't it? Because it does ours too, and we don't really get it. But it's a very new field, and we're very much in the infancy. So basically,
does this live in the same realm as quantum physics or quantum? Is like, yes, quantum a meaningful term, or is, yes, it like a space age term?
No. It is very much quantum mechanical. Like, it is using the properties of quantum physics as a computing mechanism.
Okay.
To process certain types of algorithms and certain types of computational approaches only work well with quantum computing. You wouldn't want to have a web server making YouTube videos as from a quantum computer level. It just wouldn't make sense to do something very linear, very mathematically exact, mm-hmm, with a quantum computer. But if you want to model weather systems or do what's the best way to organize these 50 people in the room to get the you know, the closest match to this statistical model that, or something like that. Those kind of really
so dealing with things that aren't, that are abstract or unpredictable, like
unpredictable, the weather
or, is predictable, but like not but, down to,
but it has to deal with so much,
right.
Exponential and math, right? One bit changes 100 other bits. And right. so the computing component of the qubit is one major element of quantum computing. The other is quantum entanglement. And so, whereas each bit in a classic computer lives on its own and only operates on its own, qubits can become entangled with other qubits so that you could measure one and find and infer the nature of the other qubits based on the result of that one. And it's also,
it's like when someone in a really bad mood walks into a party and everyone immediately knows without right. having to communicate,
right? And so the qubit, the superposition within the qubit, and the quantum entanglement within the qubit are kind of the two magic sauces to quantum computing.
So here, I don't even I guess they're all dumb questions at this point. Where do you keep an electron?
Yeah, so...
like, is it trapped somewhere? Does it get expended? Does it need to be replaced? Is it in a cage?
Yeah, so they basically use crystals and lasers to... I'm not joking. Crystals and lasers to isolate a spinning electron. And somehow, you know, it's all done in... 0.015 Kelvin. So 0 Kelvin is absolute zero, and is 0.015 Kelvin is significantly magnitudes colder than outer space.
So none of this is real. You're just,
it really is real.
So you were just like free form writing on the way here and just like looking at different things around the room.
So they got this cryogenic, they've got these coolers with the that they're keeping these processors in, and these processors have like 5 bits in them, and it is, they use magnetrons and radio, you know, radio waves to talk to these chips. And it's all like, there are really, really, really smart PhDs that are just scratching the surface of this technology right now. And
probably really great socially, those, really those great types socially. Of people.
And so the era that we're in right now is very much the 1950s of classical computing. We are just scratching the surface. We're learning about what things could happen with it, and they're experimenting with the room-sized computer is a thing in quantum computing right now that has the equivalent power of, you know, your wristwatch kind of thing in the 50s. And so we are on the brink of this really powerful mechanism.
Like 30 years, there's going to be a Steve Jobs of quantum computing.
Yeah.
And like reality will just cease to exist.
Exactly.
We'll all implode into a wormhole accidentally created by the ons and offs and ons again.
Yeah. Yeah. It is. There's some good videos out there. There's some bad videos out there. There's a lot of information out there, but it's not very easy to digest or be succinct about. And I've got one video in particular that I'll put as a link in the podcast tonight. So,
okay. Wow. So you said there's specific applications that this is good for. So this isn't like we're all going to have quantum laptops or anything like that would be pointless.
I don't think so. Right. Yeah. And so I think how we'll see quantum computing is as cloud services for research purposes, for a, you know, ultimately it'll leak into business applications and like data mining or
Bitcoin. Optimization. It'll own all the Bitcoins.
Another is like, given our worldwide distribution networks, what's the best optimization of product flow between all of our factories and, if you're Nike and you're managing a worldwide distribution right. center and system, those kind of pieces of math about optimization are really good within quantum computing.
And I imagine like space travel and things where there's a lot of exponential things that
exactly.
can make or break your thing. Wow.
Exactly. So,
so there is literally no way to understand it. It's just one of those things where you just have to accept that it can be on and off at the same time. And
Richard Feynman. So there was a man that, and I don't remember his name right now, which is terrible.
Dianne Feinstein.
Not Dianne Feinstein, but Richard Feynman, who's a famous physicist, took this guy's idea and presented it to the Physics Council in 1980 and 81. And so it's only been since the early 80s where this was theorized. And now we are getting to the place where we're able to see it in action. And you and I can go online and play with a quantum computer and see the actual outputs.
If only we can find the website.
And then, and this is, we're scratching the surface of quantum computing. And so big data, big statistical information, protein, molecules, drug interactions and those kind of things where what if we wanted to create a X, those kind of questions can be answered with quantum computing.
Huh. Wow. That's really interesting. We were going to try to find, I can't find a video of.
Of which one?
Clownpenis.fart.
I've seen it recently.
Except somebody actually did buy the URL.
Yeah.
It's not the birthday clown.
No. It keeps coming up.
So are there other, besides IBM, obviously, are there other recognizable huge? I imagine everybody wants to.
Everybody wants to be in on it. But there's one company that is making.
There's not an Elon Musk of quantum computing.
There's a company called D-Wave that has kind of a controversial method that they controversial in the physics community of how they are creating their qubits.
Can you imagine that bar argument?
Yes,
I can take your qubit and shove it up your ass.
So they've got.
I'm both giving you the finger and not giving you the middle finger.
I'm number one. So they. D-System has D-Wave has been selling quantum computers to Google and to others. A good computer costs about $15 million.
So save your dollars now.
Save your dollars now.
Awesome. Fantastic. Well, that wraps up another episode of the Mark and Toddcast heard on the Fun Employment Radio Network. And speaking of that, next week, less than a week, right now we're recording this on a Sunday. This Saturday, December 2nd, Mark, me, and the Unipiper will be at the first annual Portland Podcast Festival.
I'm super excited.
I know.
I'm kind of nervous about
it. I'm very nervous. It's becoming a reality. It's going to be like 5 days. So yeah, we will be doing a live version of Portland at the movies. And we were originally planning to do, I don't even remember what it's called, a Ron Livingston movie that was... that Sarah Dillon was an extra for, and we're going to find out if she was ever in the movie. But instead, something quite magical came across our desk. Some would say a Christmas miracle. And that Christmas miracle is Chuck Norris. So that'll be a nice tease for the show we will be doing live next weekend at the Hawthorne Theater. Get tickets if you haven't already. It's going to be awesome. There's going to be 13 different podcasts, two bands. You'll get a free drink with your ticket. So it's like an awesome deal, and I'm kind of excited to hear some of the other podcasts too. There's some of the other Fun Employment ones, but then there's things like the Sprocket podcast, who Brian knows, yep, because I think he's been on their show.
He's been on their show, yeah.
And in fact, I think he might have heard about that that railroad thing I did by Tillamook. Oh, yeah. I think he found about that. Or no. When I was recording the tour guide, he's like, "You're the second podcast that's come out here for this." And I said, "Well, who's the other?" He's like, "The Sprocket podcast." And I was like, "Oh,
anything
that's great.
On bikes,
yeah,
they'll do."
So it'll be really cool. Come out, say hi. We'd love to see you. Anything else we have?
I think that's it.
Nothing. All right. Well, thank you for listening. Find us on Facebook. Friend us. Say hi. Review us. And are we on Stitcher yet?
Oh, we will be.
Okay. We will be on Stitcher soon, Dimitri. So thank you for letting me know that we were not on Stitcher, because I guess I just figured we are, because that's, we both were on Stitcher and not on Stitcher. We were quantum podcasting.
Quantumly.
All right. I'll take you out with this Saturday Night Live skit. So we will see you guys later.
Trust. An important part of building a family and an important part of planning his future. That's why I rely on Dillon Edwards & Company. For nearly a century, investors on Wall Street have trusted Dillon Edwards with their financial future. And now all the resources of America's oldest investment firm are available online. Dillon Edwards on the internet at www.clownpenis.fart. A lot of investment companies rushed onto the internet, but Dillon Edwards took their time. Sure, when they were ready, there was only one web address left, but it's one you can count on.
For mutual funds.
Clownpenis.fart.
Online brokerage.
Clownpenis.fart.
Retirement and tuition planning.
Clownpenis.fart.
The people you trust at clownpenis.fart.